Nah, not those lions. Three lions we can get behind.
And he hoofed it.
There's more pressure being ratcheted up with a loss like that, of course.
Just getting the head boxed off, should that just kind of happen.
For all your Lions coverage this summer, download the OTB Sports app.
The OTB Podcast Network with GetZetGo. Black Box Car Insurance lets young drivers bounce past high-cost premiums. Drive safe and save more with GetZetGo.ie.
Okay, so Frankie Dolan has got a new book out. It is called Outside of the Right. After a couple of technical issues, Frankie Dolan is with us. We both struggled with Zoom, it turns out. Frankie, neither you or I are technical geniuses.
No, well, I'd say it was on my half. Oh, now, myself and my phone and my laptop. I wouldn't be a man for the laptop, but hopefully the phone will work now. I'd never off it, so hopefully it'll work.
Well, I was just going to say, I mean, do you pine for the days of traditional communication? Has Zoom done anything for you over the course of the last year?
Yeah, it's given me a pain in my head a lot of the times. I'd be old school on. Especially when, I suppose, comes to, say, if you want to have a team meeting or talk to somebody, over the last year and a half, it's been very difficult. So I've had enough Zoom meetings to do me now a lifetime. So please God, things will start picking up a little bit more in the coming months, and we can get back to maybe sitting in a dressing room and having a bit of crack and having a chat with a football team again.
I didn't realise until reading the book that you're a postman. So you really are the bastion of the traditional communication.
I am, yeah. And that our job has got very, very busy over the last year and a half. You know, we've had Christmas nearly every day, volume-wise, you know. And I don't know whether that's a good or a bad thing, but we've been crazy busy over the last year and a half. It's quieting a little bit now in the last couple of weeks, but with shops opening. But yeah, we've been very busy, you know, getting parcels and letters and everything out to people there all over the country.
I can imagine what that must have been like for you as well, to be what is the only bit of communication that a lot of people, I'd imagine, would have got throughout the really harsh lockdowns.
Yeah, it's my area where I would cover, it'd be rural enough in the Crockery. It'd be between Athlone and Roscommon town. So there's plenty of roads off the main road, which would be the back end and over, you know. So I'd have a few older people on my own, and they wouldn't have seen people for a couple of months, bar maybe their neighbour across the road or me delivering a bill nearly every day of the week, you know. So it was very difficult for the older generation, without doubt, you know, because, you know, nobody could come and visit them, you know, their family, their friends, and all they'd really see was maybe people driving up down the road or myself throwing a letter in the letterbox or something like that.
Like I remember over the course of a couple of lockdowns, David Brady was saying that he was ringing up people to just chat to them. I'm sure you kind of felt a similar sense of duty almost, that you were there one conversation.
Yeah, that's right. And I've seen David Brady and he done a brilliant job. I enjoyed what he was doing. I listened to a lot of it as well. And no better man than Brady to talk about my own, the dogs and all that. Yeah, but it was brilliant what he done. And yeah, I had a sense of what he was up to there, you know, just getting talking to people, which is great. And I think people realise the most important thing now, more so than rushing and racing around all over our lives, is just to settle a bit and relax and just to be able to have a conversation, which is happening now, which is great.
How then was it for you to have a conversation in the pages of this book, to open up about certain parts of your life and to tell a story? Because again, it's not a traditional Irish male thing to do, to open up and tell your story, but you've done it very well in the book.
Yeah. I suppose someone like me, like I've done interviews all over the years when I was playing and managing, and you wouldn't be giving a lot away, you know the crack the way it is, it'd be the usual spin-off and that. But I suppose when I sat down and I chatted to Liam Hayes and Dan Dooner, and I had a think about it myself over a few weeks, like I just knew myself that there's no point holding back and hiding stuff. So I put everything out there as honest as I could, and that's what I wanted to do. And thankfully I'm getting good feedback from people around the country, which is great, because when I was in school and my teachers, a lot of them now have been ringing me and they say, Jesus, Dolan, of any of the people in the school, you are never going to be writing a book. And I think this is the only one that wrote a book on, because I was there for football and football alone.
When you say you were in school for football, do you mean GAA or do you mean soccer?
It would have been soccer at the start, and then I got into the GAA when I was in about fifth year, going into sixth year, then the fifth year, going into sixth year, and that's when I started packed away the soccer, and my GA career took off after that. And thankfully, I had a great career. Had some downs, but had plenty of ups, and you know, great memories of winning, whether it be with my club or I won two trophies with my county, an under 21 and a senior. So yeah, I was lucky enough that, you know, I had a bit of success along the way.
What inspired you to, I guess, take up soccer and take it more seriously and pursue that for the majority of your childhood ahead of Gaelic Games?
Yeah, well, I suppose my father would have played with Westmead. He's originally from Athlone on the Westmead side. And my uncles Desi and Ken, now they'd be a father of Desi Jr. and Gary Jr. and Kennedy, James's father, who's still playing with Westmead. And they would have been all GA people all their lives. And I suppose when we were younger, it was soccer that I was interested in. And the same with Desi and Gary. Like, it was all soccer. We would have started with probably in around under 10. We would have started with under 10s with the great Cisco Flynn, originally from Dublin. He was a brilliant trainer for us and a real character. And still, people would still talk about him back in Athlone. And went to St. Peter's then after that. So you sort of go up to, it was funny, the more you grow up in the age groups, you sort of had to move clubs. So I went to St. Peter's. And I think, Desi came along. We went to St. Peter's, played there for a few years with Jerry McHugh and Jerry Quinn, a few guys, and a couple of great years there. And then I went to Willow Park after that. Had a year or two, a year there. And then went to Athlone Town when we hit the under 17s, under 18s. And eventually I played a couple of games with Bohemians with the reserves under Turlough O'Connor. And that was nearly the end of my soccer career. After that, then it sort of petered out, and I just took up the, I got into the Gaelic. I really enjoyed it. I liked the speed of it. It was a great game back then. It was man for man, which we loved. It's not like today's game, but it was, you know, forwards could express themselves. And I loved the physical side of the things. The game was fast. It was, you were getting plenty of hits in, getting plenty of hits yourself. And I loved it. And it was a way better game that I found in soccer. When I got about 17, 18, that's what I loved. And I turned my back completely on soccer, and I never looked back on.
You were a forward in soccer as well, were you?
I was a centre midfielder.
Right.
As the boy said, I played the Ian Mowbray role.
Yeah, plenty getting forward. Plenty, your stats were good, yeah, from that position.
I was decent enough. It was probably, if I kept at it, I probably would have had a good career in soccer. Don't ask me what level, but I think I would have made it at some level. But yeah, I took it really serious up to youth, and I would have played with Athlone Town with Darren Frehill from RTE, with Darren's brother Jason. Jason was a really, really good soccer player, so the two of us used to play midfield together. And I really enjoyed it. And like, I got offered tries to play at Reading, and I just never took it up. I just didn't have the interest. And for whatever reason, I don't know, maybe I was afraid to head across England on my own or whatever. It's different nowadays, you know, but back then it would have been totally different to me. But yeah, I probably have a little regret. I didn't stick at the soccer, but at the end of the day, I can say honestly that I really enjoyed my career with the GA, and I'm still lucky to be involved. I'm still doing a bit of coaching since I retired, and I like that as well.
Desi was offered trials in Reading around the same time, was he?
Yeah, the two of us were offered trials, and I don't know, maybe I blame my old lad and Desi's old lad, Desi Senior. Like, they were probably GA men all their lives and staunch GA men that played with Westmead. Maybe if they had more soccer in their blood, they might have roped us to go over the water and have a trial.
Like, it's an interesting point, like, because it's, I guess, at that point, if you're nervous about going over to England, the one thing you maybe needed was just that little bit of a push, or somebody to just give you to kick up the hole and say, no, listen, just go and do it. It'll only be for a short period of time or whatever.
Yeah, and I touched about that in the book as well, and that's probably, you probably nailed it there, that we weren't, as you said, given a kick up the arse to say, right lads, let's go over and see what happens and give it a go. But it didn't materialise, and it's something that I think about every now and again. I wouldn't think about that often, but I'd often wonder what would have happened if we went over and see how we would have got on over there, you know, because soccer was our first game, believe it or not. It was definitely my first game. You know, I preferred it way more than Gaelic. I played under 12s at St. Bridget's, and I didn't play again then until I was a minor. And I know Desi played a bit growing up, but Slacker would have been his first game as well. And I think we were better soccer players than we were Gaelic players, but that's the way it just went in the end. We just ended up staying with Gaelic football.
Who was the better Dolan at soccer, though?
Oh, I was. You can ask him that. I'll vouch for that. But he was a good one, too.
Where did he play?
He was a forward. I was supplying the bullets to him on.
Right. Yeah. Okay, yeah. I see. Why did you give up GEA between 12 and 16, or 12 and 18, as you said there?
Probably the main reason was I was told at the time that I had to make a choice, right, whether it be Gaelic or soccer. And, you know, you wouldn't have that nowadays. But back then, like, that's what we were told. Well, I was told you have to pick one or the other. And I went into soccer and, you know, I enjoyed it. I really enjoyed the soccer. I traveled all over the country playing for Athlone Town and St. Peter's, you know, Willow Park. And, you know, I had a really good time of it. And yeah, that's the reason we were told. It's strange, like, because you wouldn't be told that nowadays. If a coach said that to a young lad now, the coach would be wrong, you know?
Mm, yeah. Yeah, well, it's true. And there is that attitude out there. Like, in the book, though, you do make the point that if you do want to make it at soccer, sooner or later, you'll have to specialise. And maybe if you've been playing GEA for half of your childhood, you kind of need to be doing that in your early teens, if you want to make it, that is.
Yeah, well, if you want to make it a soccer, like soccer, you know, it's just a cutthroat business. And I know a few guys that made it a soccer, and like the dedication that they had to do, you know, to get to that level was unbelievable. Like Ray Kelly would have been a year or two older than me. He ended up playing with Man City back in when I was around 17, 18, and he didn't make it. And he was one of the best players in the country here at the time, the centre forward. Alan Sheehan from McLone has had a great career and is still involved over in England. And his father, Mickey, would have had to be bringing him over and back to England for trials and matches. And, you know, every week they were doing something, which was unbelievable, you know. And just, you know, seeing what Alan done to make it. Now, he didn't play in the Premier League, but to get to the level he got to, which was a really good level, you know, it's unbelievable. And to make it now is probably even harder again, you know, with the talent that's worldwide and it's so easy to access players.
Yeah, I don't think we actually appreciate sometimes some of the Irish lads who make it in the Championship or in League One, just the level they've got to make it there. A couple of things I wanted to chat to you about, Frankie. First of all, anybody who reads this book will know that you'll have worked with some of the most interesting minds in recent GAA history, whether it's at club level or at county level. So I'll throw this one out to you first of all. Who was the best manager you've played under in GAA?
Ooh, geez, that's a good question, Owen. As you say, I played for a lot of high-profile managers: Anthony Cunningham, John O'Mahony, Kevin McStay. Oh, geez, Tommy Carr, John Tobin, Desi Dolan Senior. The best manager, I'd probably have to say, I only got to play under John O'Mahony for 1 year with St. Bridget's back in '97, and I played a few times with him when John was over the Connacht team for the Railway Cup. And I love John O'Mahony, and I'd probably say John O, and what he's done with the game, what he's done with Leitrim, then into Galway, you know, and he was involved with Ballina when they won the All-Ireland club title as well. So, you know, I'd have to say John O'Mahony, just the way he operated back in 97, it really opened my eyes. I was only 18 or 19 going into that dressing room, and Bridges hadn't won a county final for 20-something years or something like that, something crazy, and we got John O'Wayne, and first year in, bang, title, you know, and, you know, it was unbelievable.
What makes him such a good manager? Like, it's hard sometimes to, even if you watch A Year Till Sunday, to pick up on what it is. Some of the techniques, obviously, in terms of motivation are quite obvious from that documentary where he's putting literal articles up on the dressing room wall to motivate players. But from your experience, what made him so good?
I suppose the respect the players have for him, you know, he's not a bullshitter. John O'Mahony is straight up, you know, and he knows what he's talking about. He came into our dressing room, and I'll never forget, he put a banner up, St. Bridget's 1997 Roscommon Senior Football Champions. And, like, that's the way he came into the dressing room, the way he operated like that. It sort of opened our eyes and said, you know, we start believing in him, you know. And I said, Jesus, we might win. Like, this is my first year. And some of the lads that were there for donkey's years, I think they probably thought John was mad, you know, because they got hammered in championships. They didn't even get to finals for, I don't know, 15, 20 years. And, for him to come in and just put that up and to have that on the wall, and that sort of gave lads the belief straight away. So just this lad must know what he's doing. And we bought into it. And, you know, the trainer was savage. There was no excuses. John O'Mahony wouldn't take excuses. I remember one of the lads, he was the best player with Bridges the previous couple of years, the forward called Paul Brennan. And we called him Timber. Timber for a reason. But Timber was a brilliant footballer. And he was our best forward. And Timber told Jono, and now Jono and Paul's father, Donny Brennan, they'd be very good friends and still are all over the years. They're very close friends. Paul told Jono that he was thinking about going to America for the summer. And Jono says, sure, go. That's it. I don't want to see you again. And he dropped him straight away. And that set a tone on, you know what right. I mean? And like Jono was he wasn't getting rid of our best player, but he was telling him he didn't want to see him. He didn't want him playing any league, nothing like that. And that laid down the foundations, I think, for everybody to row in behind him, you know. And, you know, something like that just made such a big difference to the team. And, it was some statement to do, coming in, fresh in, not winning a championship for over 20 years. And to do that with your best forward was unbelievable.
Yeah, that's really interesting. You listed off a load of managers that you played for there, a lot of great managers. You didn't mention John Mahan's name.
No. I didn't play for John that long, so I wouldn't know if he's that good of a manager. I played him for a few weeks, but he got sacked in the end.
He gave you the sack before that, though.
He did, yeah. He gave myself and four other lads the sack, our captain and our all-star footballer from previous 3 or 4 years. Yeah, he came in and he announced himself to the Roscommon public by dropping five of supposedly the most senior and best player. So it didn't work out well for him in the end.
There are numerous counties where this happens, isn't there, where a manager comes in and tries to make a mark. Sometimes it works. I suppose you would say that the vast majority of the time, though, it's probably not a great first reaction to managing a team.
No, definitely not. Like old people don't realise the rivalry between Roscommon and Mayo. Like, we hate each other. And I remember Mahan came into the dressing room after the 2004 kind of final when Mayo beat us. And like, he was just strutting around the dressing room. Like, lads were not in a good place, you know, pissed off after losing a kind of final to our greatest rivals, you could say. And John came in and he was just blowing about how good Mayo were and what they're going to do and, you know, all this type of bullshit. And I was looking around the dressing room. I've seen a few lads now and I'm surprised Mahan didn't get a belt, because I remember looking around seeing Mixer Ryan, Francie Graham, you know, a few, Nigel Dineen, you know, there was a couple of hard boys there that, like, wouldn't like to listen to that sort of stuff. And that was sort of the arrogance that they have, and they probably still have Mayo, they still have that arrogance. And I don't mind saying it, because I'm great friends with a couple of ex-Mayo footballers, the Mortimers, and they know how I feel about them, great footballers, but that Mayo have an arrogance that they think they're entitled to win this or win that, you know. And when I heard Mahan in the dressing room that time, and then, you know, when he came to Roscommon, like, I was sort of excited that we had a new manager coming in, but it was sort of iffy that it was John Mahan that was coming in, because he's only living across the border. And when he came in, he dropped five of us. And like, I heard it over the radio station in Roscommon. I didn't get a phone call. I didn't get a message or answer from John to say, would you meet up and have a chat with you? Like, that was disappointing, you know. Have the balls to ring a fella or meet him and say, I was only 27. That you're not part of my panel. And like, there was four other players, top class players, dropped as well. Like, and it was done in a way that it was sort of, to me, there was no real balls to it, you know. Excuse the pun, but you know, it was done. It was leaked to the media and it was put out in the local radio station, which to me wasn't good.
Did you find out why he dropped you, or what the reason was for it?
I didn't find out, but I've heard that he thought I wasn't good enough. That's what I've heard now. So I didn't hear it from John himself, but maybe someday if I meet him somewhere along the line, he might give me an explanation. But I was good enough in 2008, actually, 3 years later. And I was nearly at the end of my career, so I don't know why he brought me back.
Yeah, you'll have Offaly and Roscommon in Division 2 of the league next year. It'll be a nice opportunity to meet up and watch a game of football.
Oh, wouldn't it be lovely to be on the line in that game?
tell me, so you talk about that Mayo arrogance. So is that something that still exists in Mayo, do you think?
Oh, without a doubt, yeah. And I don't know. Maybe it's a good thing. I don't know. But I think the field are entitled to win Sam Maguire. And, like, no one is entitled to win Sam Maguire. You have to put in a massive, massive effort, not just over a year or two, but over a long period of time. And, like, Mayo had their chances over the last couple of years against Dublin, and they just didn't take it. And, like, I was at these games, and I was with people in Croke Park, surrounded by Mayo people, and, like, they never sort of said that Dublin is a great team. It was always something was against them, whether it be a referee's call or, you know, an umpire's call or something like that. You know what I mean? And, like, the Mortimers be the same. They'd be, like, saying we should have, you know, we should be winning these games, you know. And you got to go and win them. They had the chances. They had chances all over the years, all over the last 20 years to win the odd All-Ireland here and there, and they never took it.
Mm. And you feel that there's just not a sense of responsibility that they take upon themselves after those games?
Well, I'm just talking about, I don't know the current Mayo players, but I'm just talking about, say, the fans on All-Ireland Final Day. They're always coming up with excuses. That, like, they'll never say that Dublin were the better team. Maybe Mayo were the better team on the day, but they didn't beat them. You know, and you got to go and have the balls to go and win All-Ireland and, you know, stop making excuses that there was a curse put on the team from 100 years ago or something like that. You know, that has nothing got to do with not beating Dublin in Croke Park.
Yeah, I'm sure some people still believe it, though, and I'm sure they're thinking it'll pass eventually. Just one other thing on the manager's front. One of the people we possibly in an alternate reality could have added to this list is Paddy O'Shea. How close did you come to playing for him?
Yeah, very close on. I met Paddy in Kinnegad in Bracken's pub one evening before he was going training with Westmead, and it was back in 2005, so it wasn't long after we were dropped off to a Scotland panel. And, you know, it was probably a little bit too early for it to happen on. You know, it was still only a couple of weeks after we'd been dropped. You know, I was chatting to Desi about it. Desi chatted to Paddy about it. And, like, Paddy wanted it. He wanted it to happen. And he plagued me after that. And I have it in the book. I was afraid to answer the phone to him because I know I would have said yes. Because we clicked straight away. We had great crack chatting about football and where I was in my career and what happened with Roscommon and all that type of stuff. He wanted to pair me up front with Desi, and that's something that I would have loved to have done, you know, because I would have played underage soccer for maybe 6-8 years with Desi when we were younger, you know, so we would have been very close. And I wanted it to happen, but when I sat back and I gave it a couple of days, and I was thinking it was too short a time after I was dropped from Roscommon. You know, I didn't want it to look like sour grapes and throwing the grapes out or whatever. And I just let it settle, and it just let it off, and it just didn't happen. But it almost happened a couple of years after that with Tomás O'Flaherty. And, you know, for some reason, I can't remember exactly what it was like, but everything was more or less put in stone, and everything was done. But according to, I think it was the chairman back then, I needed to move club. And I wasn't moving club because I already had moved club maybe 7 or 8 years before that, or 6 or 7. And I didn't want to move club again just to play county football, you know. And that's how close, it was so close, you know, but yet so far. But it's something that I'm sorry it didn't happen when Tomás came knocking on the door. That's when I was 100% certain in my own mind that I wanted to go and play with Westmead, because the connections I'd have with Westmead, I would have went to school in Westmead, grown up in Westmead. You know, I'd have a lot of connections in Westmead. You know, my father is from Westmead, but it didn't happen in the end, which was a pity.
How do you think the Roscommon GEA supporters would have felt about that?
I probably wouldn't be happy, but they'd have to see where I'm coming from as well. Like, I was out of the inter-county football scene for a couple of years on, and I wasn't getting any younger. And, like, I thought to myself, this is the only chance I probably have of playing inter-county football again. And So I gave Desi the shout, met with Tomás, you know, had a great chat with him for a couple of hours, and he knew the lie of the land. And, like, I suppose I was a little bit older and a little bit wiser, and I knew the time was right then to go for it. And it's just a pity it didn't happen, because I would have loved to have played the Westmeath for a couple of years.
Yeah, I'm sure it was a brilliant setup to be a part of as well, those couple of setups. Just a couple of other things just to touch on, Frankie. Like, I'm really interested in this period of your life around 2002 onwards. Like, you talk obviously about there was a couple of injuries, there was a couple of suspensions here and there. There was a period of time where you found yourself training on your own quite a bit. You were in solitude in the early months of the year quite a bit. do you look back on those times as like especially grim, or do you look back and say, God, that was amazing that I was actually out here grafting on my own and trying to find that mental fortitude to be able to succeed?
It probably made me a bit stronger, but when you're involved with a county team, you want to be training with, you know, you need to be training with the team. Mm. It's grand saying you're training away from the team, but like when you're not involved with this, with the training, with the drill, with the games, you know, you're not in the manager's mind. Like, it was grand to be there training on, but like, I had a couple of bad injuries. I pulled a quad muscle before the league semi-final against Mayo up at Marcus Park 1 year, and I came on and, you know, I done more damage to it by just coming on, you know, and that set me back again. I had the shoulder operation after the kind of final against Mayo in 2001. I dislocated that against Galway. That set me back probably a year or more, because I actually felt, I have it in the book as well, I fell down the stairs a couple of days after the operation. I was living in Dublin at the time, and I was sleeping downstairs and went up to the toilet in the middle of the night. And I'll never forget, it was a carpet stairs, and I took one step and my foot went from under me and, you know, slid down the stairs. My left arm went back, ripped the stitches. You know, I nearly put my foot through the door with the pain that was in my arm, and I had to go back to Blackrock Clinic, you know, and them little things and a couple of hamstring injuries, that all set me back. And, you know, at county level, you need to be fit, you need to be training, and all that stuff set me back, which didn't help my inter-county career.
I do find it remarkable as well that maybe there was such an influence on trying to get yourself ready by running and running and running, and that was it. And trying to do that on your own, that can't have been easy on the head. That can't have been good for the head at that time, when there was maybe just a lack of appreciation about the mental well-being of players.
Yeah, I know what you're saying. Yeah, it's not a good place for a player, for any player to be. Even nowadays, you know, players, you know, the very support they can possibly get nowadays, and you know, managers and coaches and selectors and whoever's involved with teams are aware of this, and you know, they're not afraid to ask the question: is the player okay? And that's something that I have, you know, especially this year. You know, with a lot of young lads at the team I'm involved with this year, and you don't know what's going on with players' heads nowadays. You know, there's a lot going on. Football, I think, is down the priority list, you know. But back in my day, football was top of the list. Football was before work, it was before relationships, you know, and that's the way it was with me. And, you know, when I was there and I wasn't feeling appreciated or feeling loved or whatever you want to call it, and not showing a little bit of respect, you know, sometimes I had no work, you know, I had no job, and, you know, nothing was being done. It was all left to myself, you know. So that wasn't good for me mentally, but it definitely made me stronger in years to come from my own self.
I found it interesting that in the book that you said in 2009, you went to see a counsellor because you were quite aware of the ability that would have to allow you to speak about anything that's going on in your head. I found that remarkably progressive.
Yeah, and a lot of that would have to go down to my good wife, Caroline. Like, I wouldn't speak to her, never mind to anybody else about how that like that back then. But she was really good to me. She knew my head wasn't in a good place, you know. And it was a lot of stuff. It was all to do with football on. It was, you know, that's what it was all about. I took my football serious. Like, I played football at the highest level for nearly 20 years. And, like, unless you're dedicated and you love that your sport, whatever it may be, you're not going to play at the highest level, you could say, you know, for that length of time. And like, people don't realize the effort that I would have went to personally to get myself fit, you know. And, you know, as well as that, you know, good free takers, the best free taker in the country is Dean Rock. He doesn't just go to training with the boys and kick a few frees. He's at it every other day of the week, you know. And it's small things like that, that, you know, people don't really appreciate. To go to the match on the Sunday and they'll see, geez, the lads are pissed off after losing, and they'll be coming over to you and they'll be all laughing. But like, we were taking this really serious. We were training 4 or 5 days a week 20 years ago with Roscommon, no more so than any other county. And we were in Division One league. We were getting the league semi-finals, and, you know, a lot of the leagues then, that we got to three league semi-finals. And the problem we had back then is we had a small pool of players, and we picked up injuries along the way. So at the end of these leagues, we were always sort of, you know, very, very light. And like, people don't realise the effort that we got to get to that level. And then if you lose a game, you know, you're pissed off. That's what you are. And, you know, you put so much into it. It's grand for a person going to a game to turn up to pay their €20. But like, players are training, you know, 4, 5, 6 days a week to get to where they are. And, you know, when you're not being appreciated, and if there's stuff being spread around the country or the local newspapers, in Ireland, it's a small country. Stories, you know, gather legs, and you know, you get portrayed in the wrong sense, and that's one of the reasons as well why I wrote the book.
Yeah, and there is so much more on that very subject, including the naked pool game, which the infamous, which we can laugh back at now, I'm sure, 15 years or so down the line in the book. Just one very last thing, because I think we just need to tell people about this. I mean, if I was asking you about your best managers you've played under, if I was to ask you about teammates, I'm sure Shane Curran would pop up in some shape or form.
We played the Connacht final against Salt Hill. The year Salt Hill won the All-Ireland Club. And our manager back then was Gerard Dowd, who went on to be a manager or a coach with Roscommon for a few years with Kevin McStay. And Gerard would be meticulous in his preparation, and he'd have a notebook there. It'd be like the Bible to him. He'd be writing down everything, you know, whether the drills you're doing, the mood, all that, all the games, the teams. And Kate got the... we were being hammered at halftime. And Kate got it into his head. He went over and grabbed the book off there, and he shredded it. Like you put it into a shredder to shred paper. And poor Gerard didn't know whether to cry or laugh, you know. And I think Gerard was disgusted that his Bible was gone with all his drills and everything all over the years. That was Kate destroyed it on him.
Yeah, more of that good stuff in the book, to say at least. There's some brilliant yarns in it, Frankie. I must say I really enjoyed the book. It's called Outside of the Right. It's written with Dan Dooner. It is out now. There it is. You've been listening to Frankie Dolan over the last little while. We got there in the end, in the midst of all the technical issues, Frankie. Thanks so much for being so generous with your time.
Owen, thanks a million, and thanks for all the positive feedback.
The OTB Podcast Network with GetZetGo. Black Box Car Insurance lets young drivers bounce past high-cost premiums. Drive safe and save more with GetZetGo.ie.